Coming up on this edition of Health Styles, licensed professional counselor Chelsea Allen Labom is back to talk about three related issues: compassion fatigue, burnout, and secondary traumatic stress. The first two terms are sometimes used interchangeably, but they are different in definition, origins, symptoms, and long-term effects. Chelsea will explain the difference and how secondary traumatic stress comes into the picture. She will be sharing some eye-opening information, so don't go away.
We imagine what can be done and then reimagine it for the better. We model our care after the best and then remodel to break new ground. We invest in our community, then reinvest for the future. In a world of constant change, you can't be afraid to rethink, rewrite, restart. Sarah Bush Lincoln is constantly evolving to provide you with the area's best healthcare. Sarah Bush Lincoln, trusted, compassionate care.
Welcome to Health Styles, the podcast. I'm your host, Lori Banks, and I am so pleased that Chelsea Allen Labom is back. We haven't heard from you in a while.
I know. It's been a minute.
I know. We see each other at the gym, and you presented this topic for our staff, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is a great podcast. And so you're here to talk today about compassion fatigue and burnout and all of the things that go with that.
Yes, I truly believe that this is going to be, for the listeners out there, this is going to be a very big light bulb moment for a lot of people. I think we're going to have some ahas, some realizations of, you know, am I struggling with compassion fatigue? Am I struggling with burnout? And I think it could be very helpful for those people.
I think compassion fatigue sort of came to light during the pandemic. You heard a lot about it with healthcare workers, but compassion fatigue can affect people, anybody really, who cares for someone who's in certain types of situations and certain types of jobs. So let's talk first about, as you explained to me just a few minutes ago, compassion fatigue is kind of this umbrella term. So let's start there.
Okay. So compassion fatigue is very similar to other related concepts like burnout, secondary trauma, vicarious trauma, things of that nature. But it's very different. So compassion fatigue is best described as the cost of caring. It comes from helping others, and it's this feeling of you want to continue to help others, but you're feeling too overwhelmed from being exposed to the trauma of others. It's a state of physical and mental exhaustion caused by depleted ability to cope with one's everyday environment. It's a process, and it takes time to develop, and it just keeps building slowly until you reach the point where you start to not care about yourself or others in your lives. And so you end up overusing your compassion skills and reserves, so you no longer have much to provide to others.
So this could happen to, as we said, healthcare workers. Maybe someone is caring for a sick, parent or loved one. We even talked earlier, it can happen in law enforcement.
Absolutely.
People in your position.
100%.
So let's talk a little bit about, what does compassion fatigue, you gave some symptoms, but what does it sort of look like?
So there are some very distinct symptoms of compassion fatigue that one may want to be aware of. And that's this sense of feeling helpless, hopeless, powerless, feeling irritable, angry, sad, or numb, ruminating about the suffering of others, feeling anger towards the event or the people that are causing the suffering, blaming yourself and having thoughts of not having done enough to help out the people who are suffering. There's this decreased sense of personal and professional accomplishment, and then a change in your worldview or spirituality. But there are other major symptoms that I really feel like are necessary to highlight, because these are the ones that could happen on a daily basis. And if you don't have this deep sense of awareness of your own limitations or, what's too much and when enough is enough, because some of these are very common and we may just brush them off as I'm just having a bad day. Or sometimes we even mix these up with this is just my anxiety and depression. So one of those would be mood swings. So research shows that long-term stress can lead to moderate or even severe mood swings. especially the older that you get. And so that might look like having these big drastic shifts in your mood, having a negative view of the world, or being more so pessimistic, or becoming overly irritable or quick to anger. Another symptom would be experiencing this sense of detachment, and that means having a dramatic withdrawal from social connections. This can become obvious in neglected friendships or relationships. So this happens whenever you feel like you're already too overwhelmed and you don't have enough time to take care of yourself or to spend time with others. And so you slowly over time stop making plans with your friends because it just feels like another chore, like it's just something to do on the list and you don't have enough energy for that. So then you tend to withdraw, which also in a sense is really bad for you because we need that support from others. And so it's a double-edged sword of, you know, something that we need to be aware of is, do I need this social support to feel better, or am I truly just overwhelmed and need a night to myself for some self-care? It can also lead to feelings of anxiety and depression. Lori and I were just talking about how sometimes symptoms that you have can be misconstrued. And so maybe I'm already pre-diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And so it's easy to just kind of brush these symptoms off as it's just my diagnosis. But commonly, we see that people are diagnosed with these conditions who may just be experiencing compassion fatigue and burnout and whatnot. And so because these are very common feelings and actions in response to a stressful or traumatic situation. And then if we don't cope with those feelings effectively, if we don't have a good set of tools in our tool belt, this can lead to turning toward unhealthy coping mechanisms like, you know, using substances or alcoholism. It could even lead to, avoidance, which over time, those feelings are still there. The experience is still there. So that just grows and grows and grows and turns to an even much bigger issue. And then lastly, this can also impact you as a professional and being productive, whether that's, you know, at work or whether that's at home. Stress associated with compassion fatigue can affect your mind and your body. And so you may experience some trouble concentrating or being productive, again, in those different aspects of your life.
Right. We said that compassion fatigue is this umbrella. And under that are two things. We're going to start with burnout first. A lot of us have felt, oh, I'm so burned out. I've worked on this home renovation. I'm burned out. I've worked on this big project at work. I'm so burned out. So what really is burnout?
Okay, so burnout and compassion fatigue are related, but they have two very distinct outcomes of exposure. And so burnout is this state of emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion that's caused by excessive and prolonged stress. It occurs when you feel overwhelmed, emotionally drained, and you're unable to meet constant demands. Burnout can stem from problems in the work environment and the factors that tie into that, like job satisfaction, work environment, the interactions that you have with your coworkers. And so as that stress continues, you begin to lose interest and motivation that led you to taking on this certain role in the first place. And so you also may experience this sense of loss of control, frustration, and diminishing morale.
Chelsea, how do we know when we're headed towards true burnout?
So there are some signs that someone can be aware of to acknowledge if burnout is there or if they're starting to head that way. And so a lot of it is really like your mindset, the thoughts that you're thinking. So if you're feeling like every day that you have is a bad day, or you're having a hard time finding the good that may exist throughout the day, you may be experiencing burnout. If caring for your work or your home life seems like a total waste of energy, if you're exhausted all the time, if the majority of your day is spent on tasks that you find to be mind-numbingly dull or overwhelming, and if you feel like nothing you do ever makes a difference or is appreciated, that is a huge sign of burnout. Those are things that we really need to pay attention to and to acknowledge. Having this sense of awareness and accepting that those things exist is very important if we want to effectively cope with them and work through them.
All right. Another term that falls under this umbrella of compassion fatigue is something called secondary traumatic stress. I need you to explain a little bit more about what that is.
Yes, absolutely. I felt like if we're going to be talking about burnout and compassion fatigue, that it was only right to mention secondary traumatic stress, as it's also, like Lori mentioned, a part of this overarching umbrella. And so secondary traumatic stress refers to the rapid onset of symptoms that may mirror post-traumatic stress disorder, which could be nightmares, insomnia, flashes of intrusive images, or thoughts due to secondary exposure to extremely or traumatically stressful events. This is a rescue caretaking response and occurs when an individual cannot rescue or save someone from harm, and that eventually leads to feelings of guilt and distress. And so without intervention, burnout and secondary traumatic stress can lead to compassion fatigue.
Okay. So let's talk about, we've explained what these conditions are, what the signs are. Let's talk about getting some help. I mean, what can we do if any of the things you talked about, someone is sitting there listening going, I think that's me. What should we do?
Okay, so as I was doing research for this podcast episode, I stumbled across this website. So there are assessments out there that can assess for literally anything and everything. And I found one for assessing where you may be at with some of these conditions, burnout, compassion fatigue, you know, et cetera. There's so many different things that this one assessment has that you can kind of measure where you're at. And so that website is ProQOL, so ProQOL. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, or so Pro, ProQOL, and that stands for professional quality of life. And so not only is it a good resource for assessing where you may be at, but it also has other tools on there as well that you can pull information on grounding techniques, coping mechanisms. It can provide you more information if you're having some of these symptoms or conditions that we talked about.
Chelsea, so this website, and I'll talk a little bit, I'll give the info at the end of the podcast, is not just for clinicians. This anybody can go on this.
Yes, and it is 100% free too. Okay. And it'll, if you put in your information, you can also have the results sent to an email so you can reflect back to it later. Okay. Or if you are working with a mental health professional, you can share your results and talk about that.
Okay, so do we need to be careful about this? Like, oh, I have this rash on my arm, and you go online and you find out it might be some like rare, weird disease, or you automatically think you have a brain tumor or something.
Yes, yeah.
Do you have to be a little careful with this too?
I mean, I don't think it necessarily hurts, but I do think that too much of something can always be a bad thing. And so sometimes Google may put these ideas in our head that we have something worse off than what we really do. And so with that, you want to make sure that you understand that there are these different things that could happen, but also like what's the likelihood that that worst case scenario is actually happening. And so just using this information as an educational tool and not necessarily a doomsday kind of a thing.
Yeah. Or as your substitute for, you know, real medical care. So it's a good starting point is what you're saying.
Absolutely. I think that this kind of helps to cultivate that sense of awareness, like recognizing, okay, I'm having these symptoms, but does that, you know, mean anything? And so it provides you with a score and tells you if you're at low risk, moderate risk, significant risk. And so I would say if you fall under some of the moderate to severe risk in the results of the assessment, then that might be like, okay, maybe I need to do something more for myself, or maybe I need to go talk to somebody about this. And I do have like other ways that you can limit your risks to compassion fatigue and burnout so that you don't have to just go out and take that assessment.
All right. So what are some techniques that we can try?
I think that a lot of the times we have this sense of compassion and collective grief from exposure to social media. You know, we hear about these horrific news stories all the time. Even currently, there's a lot going on in our world. And sometimes we have this sense of, you know, what can I do to help? And we may feel like there's only so much that we can do. And so sometimes that leads to compassion fatigue, pretty well aligns with some of the symptoms that we talked about earlier. And so with that, I feel like it's good to be informed, but it's also good to step away when it's becoming too much. And so limiting that exposure to social media is going to be very important. Not only that, but building that foundation of taking care of your physical needs. And so that's making sure that you are staying physically healthy by eating healthy, getting enough sleep, moving more, sitting less. All of those things can help to improve your emotional well-being. You can't build yourself up without a sturdy foundation. We also want to make sure that we're avoiding some of those unhealthy coping mechanisms that I talked about earlier, and continuing with regular health appointments, tests, screenings, and vaccinations, especially working in the medical field. We're exposed to a lot of different conditions, health risks, you know, et cetera. And so we want to make sure that we're doing everything in our control to stay on top of those things, so we don't have to worry, is this something that's happening to me, or is this something that's going to happen to me in the future?
And we've said several times in this podcast, is start with your primary care provider. If mm-hmm. you're feeling this way, they are not just there to help when you have, you know, pain or high blood pressure. They are actually a great resource to get you started if you're feeling, you know, like you have some of these issues happening, and they can kind of lead you in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of my referrals through EAP and outpatient counseling come from primary care physicians. You know, they talk about these symptoms that they're experiencing, and, you know, whether you're wanting to explore the route of medication to help with those symptoms, it's often encouraged, because medication works best in conjunction with therapy, to also talk to somebody about these issues. And I know that there's some people who are very, you know, very resistant or hesitant to go the medication route. And so sometimes they might not be aware of the EAP program that we have, or know of any agencies in the community. And so this is a good place for someone who can provide you with those resources and also validate how you may be feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at what point, if someone tries a lot of these things that we've just talked about and it's not helping, when should they speak to their primary care provider, or go to, if you work for an organization that has EAP, which is Employee Assistance Program, when do you think is time to seek out those resources?
So being affected by your work is a normal part of a caregiving profession, but when the feeling becomes overwhelming, you may be experiencing some compassion fatigue. And so I think that that's when you should seek out professional support, when you're feeling lost and you're in need of someone to talk to and help to guide you through. While the symptoms can be frightening and sometimes debilitating, these are steps that you can take to heal, and then recognizing those signs, being proactive, taking those preventative measures and seeking out treatment can help a lot. Now, if the symptoms progress to the point where it's leading to impairment in one's own thoughts and, you know, causes that threat of safety to harm themselves or to others, that's whenever you should seek that medical attention immediately. So if you're just having some symptoms here and there, maybe helpful to talk to your doctor. But if those symptoms are at a level where someone is in danger, that's when we need to, you know, present to the ED, maybe have some crisis intervention, you know, to get the help that we need.
Chelsea, it sounds like this can happen really to anybody. It's not just someone that's providing medical care or in, you know, a caregiving situation. We can all become affected by burnout, so, or compassion fatigue. So what advice do you have for all of us to follow to help maybe even prevent these things from happening in the first place?
I had mentioned earlier, I had talked about social support and how sometimes when people are feeling this way, they want to isolate. And so I just want to reemphasize that social support is crucial. You want to have someone to talk about that you trust about these concerns and how you're feeling. And whether that's through friends or a community-based support group or faith-based organizations, that could be really helpful. Not only that, but also finding a balance between your work and personal life and taking time off if you have the time available to do so. Establishing regular self-care routines, again, reemphasizing those basic needs, avoiding information overload and paying attention to how stressful or traumatic that information affects you, identifying your priorities and engaging in activities that replenish and rejuvenate you, practicing gratitude and being present in the moment to really ensure that we are not viewing the world on solely just a negative viewpoint, that we are also considering the good parts about the day. Understanding that suffering and pain are a part of the collective human experience and that we don't always have control over them. Focusing on the areas that you do have control over, like your thoughts and your feelings, rather than having unrealistic expectations about changing things that might happen beyond your control. And then again, just reemphasizing seeking that professional help when you need it and making sure that you take time to unwind through meditation, breathing, stretching, and other activities that you may find to be enjoyable.
Great advice, Chelsea. Chelsea Allen LeBlanc is a licensed professional counselor here at Sarah Bush Lincoln. It was so great to have you back. I know we got to have you back again.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'd be glad to come back.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you.
That's our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Chelsea mentioned a website that provides assessment tools. That site is proqol.org. The QOL stands for Professional Quality of Life. The website has assessment, self-care tools, and handouts that are all related to the topic we just discussed in this podcast. Remember that the information we present in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be considered a substitute for medical care. Be sure to talk to your healthcare provider about your own health needs and concerns. To learn more about the services and providers at Sarah Bush Lincoln, including Chelsea and SBL Behavioral Health Services, head over to our website at sarahbush.org. That's Sarah with an H. Until next time, I'm your host, Lori Banks, for Health Styles. Have a great day.